Check Podcasts.
The Center for Ocean Applied Sustainable Technologies, or COAST, welcomes you to COAST Talks, showcasing the people, ideas, businesses, and communities driving innovation in Pacific Canada's sustainable blue economy. Brought to you by the South Island Prosperity Partnership.
Welcome to the COAST Talks podcast, a deep dive into the innovations driving BC's blue economy. My name is Jason Goldsworthy, and I'm the Executive Director of COAST, the Centre for Ocean Applied Sustainable Technologies. As Pacific Canada's hub for the sustainable blue economy, COAST supports its members to research, start up, and scale sustainable ocean innovation, tapping into a $3 trillion global opportunity. On today's episode, we're learning more about an ocean-based solution to a carbon-emitting problem, a product that's been described as a revolutionary approach to marine construction. To talk more about this topic, joined by John Richardson, CEO of Seabrick. It's a pleasure to welcome John today, who's coming all the way from Bella Bella in northern BC, and look forward to having this discussion. Welcome, John.
Jason, thanks very much for having me.
Absolutely. So, John, Seabrick, great name for a product. Obviously, it sort of explains what it is, but can you tell us a little bit more about it and what the Seabrick concept is?
Sure. Yeah, like you say, the name kind of says it all. It's an interlocking brick that floats that's made out of kelp. So we've developed a process for taking kelp, processing it, and it becomes a very hard composite. We're calling it kelp stone. So you can make kelp into this kelp stone, and it's three times stronger than concrete. So it's very strong, and this is kind of one of the miracles of kelp. Not only does it grow 30 times faster than any plant, it's a very good companion to other chemicals in reaction processes. So you can make all sorts of different, very interesting products out of it. And it turns out that it's very good for infrastructure. So the idea is we take this this composite, shape it using a mold, and it becomes a brick that locks with other bricks. And it's coated by a kind of a waterproof shell. One of the prototypes, a miniature version, printed in 3D, of what the bricks kind of looked like. They locked together kind of like in a jigsaw pattern, and it was made of kelp, basically. Primarily, not completely made of kelp. There's other chemicals in there, other additives, but primarily made out of kelp.
So, John, I mean, as a civil engineer, this is quite extraordinary, right? Because I'm thinking of some of the applications. But in that approach to the sustainability, can you explain how the use of kelp helps in that world?
Firstly, it sequesters carbon. So 40% of the dried weight of kelp or other macroalgae, there's kind of a general category of these seaweeds, is sequestered carbon. Basically, when kelp grows, it sucks CO2 out of the water, but it's at the surface level of the water. So as it sucks CO2 out of the water sucks CO2 out of the air. So it's basically atmospheric carbon. So it sequesters CO2. It's regenerative. So you could think about, well, it's sequestering CO2, but not only that, it's also replacing concrete and steel. And together, concrete and steel make up about, I think it's 19% of global emissions, just the production of concrete and steel. You know, almost 1 in 5 tons of CO2 is a result of those processes. And everyone knows that concrete is just everywhere. If you want to build anything on the ocean, you know, it has to float. And there aren't many choices for infrastructure that will float. And it basically boils down to floating concrete and floating steel. Basically concrete, a concrete shell with some maybe styrofoam in the middle, it's floating concrete, and steel, well, like ships or barges, you know, a thin shell of steel and, you know, empty space. So those are the main options that people have for building things on the ocean. Not very sustainable. So not only does the Seabrick sequester carbon, it also replaces these other things that are very carbon emissions intensive. So it does those two things.
And you mentioned earlier at the top that it's it grows 30 times faster than other plants too. So the product cycle is quicker, and we're not depleting a resource that we do with concrete and steel.
Or even, frankly, wood. You know, I mean, where would you get kelp? I mean, a lot of people are harvesting wild kelp, you know, and you can do a quite a sustainable harvest of wild kelp. It grows very quickly. But it's only very limited regions where kelp will grow, because kelp actually has to root on the seafloor. And so it grows in areas that are less than 40 meters deep. It has to be less than, usually less than 30 meters deep. But you can have a kelp farm where it floats, and you root the kelp on ropes that are held down by a weight. And when you do that, you can grow in any kind of water, any kind of depth. And you're not competing with existing ecosystems. I think that's very important. You know, so if we're harvesting trees, we're harvesting trees that, you know, have little squirrels living in them. And they're, you know, they're you can't, that land is kind of spoken for. You know, there's already an ecosystem there if we weren't cutting down the trees. But we can go into spaces that don't really have existing ecosystems. And, you know, I mean, the surface of a lot of the ocean is pretty barren place. So you can grow things there and actually make it quite fertile, and you're not pushing out an existing ecosystem. So in that regard, you can think about kelp as almost an infinite resource. And that's a kind of a hard concept to make, but you could keep on growing kelp and it would never stop growing if you kept it going. You could keep on growing and it can grow a lot of kelp and grow. I mean, just think about the scale of the ocean. If you can make farms that can withstand the rigors of the ocean, no small thing, it has to withstand the rigors of the ocean, but if you can scale the infrastructure to do that, which Seabrit can help with, you can actually, you know, use the kelp to build the infrastructure to create the giant kelp farms that can grow the kelp, that can build the infrastructure, you know, etc. So, you know, one of the barriers to growing kelp in that kind of volume, and there are many startups actually that are growing kelp just to sink it to the bottom of the ocean to get the carbon credits. Mm-hmm. And you think, well, that's kind of a strange idea, but I can see how that makes sense. You know, and maybe that's even a great idea. It actually is a great idea, but you can't scale the farms, because to scale the farms, you need to go into deep water, and to go into deep water, you need infrastructure. And if you're going to have infrastructure, then you're building things out of concrete and steel, and now you're back right at the beginning, because now you've just emitted all of that CO2 in pursuit of the CO2 that you're going to sequester. Yeah. So you just canceled your own game.
No, I was just going to say, so it's that full, and you mentioned it's that full circular, and that's where I want to come back to Seabrick, and it could then replace any of that infrastructure construction. This type of Seabrick could replace the use of concrete and steel in those floating environments, and there are a lot of different applications for that, I imagine, not just the farms themselves.
Yeah, I mean, you name it, and even the applications we do have are limited by the cost and materials, but what do we have? We have bridges, we have docks, we have barges, we have, you know, kelp farms, but also other aquaculture operations. We have floating power stations, we have solar farms, we have wind farms. And this is the one I always come back to, we have a quarter of a billion people who are living in coastal areas right now whose homes will be underwater in the next 50 years. So where are those people going to go? You know, that's I mean, if you know, Seabrick has an environmental mission, but also has a social mission. And the social mission is blunting the impact of climate change on those affected coastal communities, hundreds of millions of people that are going to see their homes go underwater. So they need other options for habitat. And it's going to be very competitive arable land in 50 years from now. It's going to be much more limited than we have right now. Droughts and floods and all the other things, and then rising sea levels on top of that. It's going to be very competitive. We're also going to have more people on the planet by that point. No one's going to be in a hurry to give up their land to, you know, a few hundred million displaced refugees. So we're going to have to find other options. And that's the hope here, is that if we can create a product that can scale easily, and that is the miracle of kelp, it can scale. Unlike almost anything, you can scale kelp. Then by empowering these coastal communities to grow kelp and manufacture Seabrick, they can actually manufacture their own solution to rising sea levels, you know, and it could make a huge difference to many people.
Well, and I think it's a magical, it's almost changing the way we envisage infrastructure, especially around the oceans, because you're opening up a brand new product, a brand new opportunity that's going to open up different different possibilities. You mentioned earlier that some of the limitations we have of infrastructure around the oceans is it's costly. You know, you have to build out. So I believe Seabrook is a little bit more, because it comes from the ocean, it can be a little bit more reliable. You talked about it's got three times the strength of concrete. So this could open up a whole new level of possibilities for infrastructure.
Yeah, my mind, you know, I'm a bit of a dreamer, but I certainly have visions of floating cities dancing in my head. You know, I mean, you know, hundreds of millions of people are going to be finding new homes in ocean environments. What does that look like in a century or 150 years? Like, we can't even imagine, you know?
So that's down the track, and we'll come back to that one. But right now, you're going through the development of the Seabrook. I know you're working on some pilot projects. In fact, I think you're in Bella Bella at the moment, looking at the manufacturing facilities, et cetera. Explain to me where you are on the pathway of Seabrook.
Yeah, we're still an early stage kind of startup. They have something called technology readiness levels. And so we have kind of two products, really. One is the kelp stone, you know, turning kelp into this like, super hard and super strong substance. So that has been tested and proved. I think we're at a, what's called a technology readiness level 5 with that. We could start producing products out of the kelp stone right away. Could be pavers, could be plant pots, could be anything that you need to be strong and that can be done in a mold. It's like a replacement for a high-density fiber, fiberboard. And then the more advanced product is the actual Seabrook itself, the formed thing with the shell. And that's at a less advanced level. I would say that's at technology level 3. Mm-hmm. And both of them are the subject of a joint research with the University of British Columbia's Engineering Department and Bioproducts Institute. So we've been working with them for about a year now. We currently have, they're called a capstone project. So this is in their final year of engineering. Students can sign up to be a part of a team to work on an industry project. So we started last year with a capstone team working on the optimization of the capstone. Mm-hmm. So they worked on that for the past year, and the Bioproducts Institute got involved. And so that was a very successful initiative. And students had a great time, you know. They're in the lab cooking things up, and it was looking a lot of fun, actually. Yeah. And so this year we have 3 capstones happening. So now it's kind of grown. So we are continuing with the optimization of the kelp stone. And now we have another team that's working on the shell. We call it kelp shell, for better words. So kind of it's also sourced from biologic and organic ingredients, but trying to achieve the goal of a waterproof membrane around the kelp stone, because this is not completely waterproof. You know, this is a little water resistant, but I wouldn't want to, I mean, it would be like wood. It would get saturated and it would sink over time. So it needs to have some kind of coating that would protect it from getting saturated. So that's the subject of the second capstone this year. Mm-hmm. Third capstone is the manufacturing engineers. So they're working on developing a scalable manufacturing process that could be deployed in a community like Bella Bella. That's close to the source of kelp. And by the way, kelp, Bella Bella and many of the indigenous communities of the mid and north coast have incredible kelp resources. There's all these kelp forests around here. And thankfully, the Heiltsuk are wonderful stewards of their natural resources, you know, when they get the chance to have a say in the matter, which is unfortunately not always the case, but they are very oriented towards keeping their resource and local environment sustainable. And so they, I think quite conservatively, have estimated the annual sustainable harvest from their wild forests at more than 1 million kilograms a year of kelp. Yeah, very significant. And that is even before they get into farming the kelp or doing anything intentional. That's just the existing kelp forests here. And the good thing about kelp is you can harvest the upper canopy of kelp, and they'll just regrow, you know? Mm. Yeah.
Yeah, it's very, very robust in terms of a plant, I understand. But you talked about the indigenous communities, and it does seem to be a natural fit. A lot of indigenous communities are located on the Pacific Canada coast, and there's a huge opportunity here for them to be involved. And I know you're a fantastic advocate for working with indigenous communities. Maybe give me a little bit of a background on your story there as well.
Oh, well, you know, it happens to be that I'm connected with the health sick through prior work. When I was younger, I worked for an organization called the Wilderness Committee, and they were kind of leaders on a campaign called the Great Bear Rainforest Campaign. So it was dedicated to protecting some of the forest in the mid-coast from logging, and they fastened on this white bear as kind of the emblem of the area. It's called the Spirit Bear. So it was a big campaign, and I was charged with writing a legal handbook for the local guardians. So this is the indigenous kind of local police to protect their land, and what powers did they have to, you know, kick people out or police the overconsumption of resources. So that was where I first came up to Bella Bella about 25 years ago. And then in a subsequent company before Seabrick, it's called Othello. We do community engagement processes and community governance processes. So we have done a fair amount of work, again, with the Haltsa community up here around their climate energy plan, their clean energy plan, their climate action plan. So a bunch of different planning processes. And so again, I was coming into Bella Bella for that. And so it was a natural choice, really, when we realized, you know, we would need to have partners that had access to kelp resources, and you know, I had these relationships. But it's not just the relationships. I mean, there's a real hunger here for economic alternatives. You know, unfortunately, I think their interactions with kind of much of the economy have been extractive. So they have trawlers coming in and overfishing, even Chinese boats coming in overfishing. There's overlogging, just a lot of extraction of our resources, not a lot of thought to long-term sustainability. And they really, and also there's not a lot of secondary jobs. You know, they take the logs out. They don't process the logs here. They don't, you know, it's just raw logs or raw fish, and they get processed somewhere else. So they really want to have some kind of secondary manufacturing, some more higher quality kind of year-round jobs. And so that is one of the reasons why they're also interested in having a manufacturing facility up here as well. It could be a source of kind of good jobs for them.
Yeah, and you mentioned before as well, it's long-term sustainability, and kelp gives us that opportunity to potentially work a way out to make sure we're not being too exploitive and that we're doing it the right way. You talked about the kelp farms and in deeper water and not having a huge impact on the ecosystem as well. So I think it's a positive in so many different ways.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm you know, just generally very stoked about the whole, the whole idea of kelp, you know, and you know, my favorite picture, I wish I had it here, but it's a picture of the globe from a kind of a place just above the South Pacific. And you look down on the globe and all you see is blue. It's just completely blue, the whole thing. And you can see a little edge of land around one corner, but it just underscores how much water there is on this planet, you know? Yeah. And a lot of that water is technically desert. You know, there is whales and big sharks that pass through it, and there's some surface creatures, but the density of life in most of the ocean is very low. So, you know, we have an opportunity kind of in the way that we interact with the deep oceans to actually be a source of life, bringing kind of farms and, you know, be kind of a generative component into the oceans.
I'm going to come back to your personal journey. So this is a fabulous product. Tell me what you've sort of learned through the development of the product and what are the sort of the challenges you've got coming up.
Oh, well, you know, we haven't gone to market yet. Mm-hmm. So we have, you know, technology development, a runway in front of us. I've certainly learned a lot about material science. You know, my background is mathematics. I did a philosophy degree and a law degree. So I don't have any, you know, engineering or some basic chemistry really, but so I've been learning a lot, about that, and it's been wonderful working with the university and you know, these very inspired students that are just throwing themselves into the project. So that has been a big learning journey. You know, and this is my third organization. My first was called Pivot Legal Society. It was a legal organization. My second was Othello. It was this digital democracy software platform. And so this is my third. And I'm starting to feel like I'm starting to get it, you know, and apologies to all those that I've worked with in the past that have had to like watch me learn my lessons, but I'm starting to kind of understand how to get a company going and an organization going. And I want to get it going quickly. You know, it has to scale quickly. If it's going to have the impact it needs to have, it's not going to be enough to produce thousands or even tens of thousands of these bricks. It's going to have to produce millions of these bricks, and it's going to have distributed manufacturing around the world. So, you know, one of our goals is to create a manufacturing process that is very compact and transferable, that we could fit in a container and ship to a community on the coast of Bangladesh, right, where they can grow their own kelp. And, you know, little known fact, the most densely populated country in the world, Bangladesh, will be 30% underwater as a result of rising sea levels. So that's a lot of people going to get displaced. So anyway, I kind of moved away from my personal journey back into the whole thing. But it's certainly interesting to, see what's possible. You know, I don't think people's imaginations have really been open to the ocean as a new frontier, really, for human habitation. But I think that reality is going to be there for many people. I kind of think about it as Mars for everybody. You know, it's not just going in a little spaceship. How many people are actually going to live on Mars? 10,000? You know, really, how many people can get on a spaceship and travel to Mars? But the ocean's a big place, and it's got air and water and life, and it could be a new colony for many people, a new frontier.
And what would be sort of your advice? I mean, I admire your journey because it's been into an emerging market. It's something that no one's doing. It's got massive applications and it's brand new. I mean, we met a few months ago and it blew my mind away with the concept. What would be your advice to others that are starting up in that sector as well? Like you've built businesses, you've been very successful at building those businesses, but this is leaning into a brand new market, almost opening up a market. You talk about new infrastructure and stuff. So is there some advice there that you would give others that are leaning in that direction?
Well, I mean, as you mentioned, no one has done this before. So sometimes that can work. You know, it's sometimes something feels totally crazy and wacky. And the first time I looked at this idea, it's like, wow, that is kind of a wacky idea. Like that is really out there. And frankly, I was like, I wonder who's doing this. You know, I kind of looked around, I was like, so somebody's got to be doing this. What does it look like? And then I realized that no one is doing it. It's like, what? You know, all these ideas about floating cities, but no one's actually really thought about how to build this infrastructure of those cities in a scalable way. So at that point, it just kind of took over my brain, frankly, and I just became a bit obsessive about the whole concept. And I had to make a choice. It's like, well, am I going to let this happen? It's kind of like I accidentally got pregnant with an idea, you know, and you have to make a decision. He's like, are you going to carry this to term, or are you going to like go on with your life and like pretend it didn't happen? And I just decided, you know, because I was very busy with Othello. And so anyway, I don't know how much choice I had in the matter. It was just like, it took over my brain.
Well, one of the questions I had planned out was, what keeps you going? What keeps you getting up and doing this? But I think you've probably answered that. I mean, it's just your motivation and your excitement about it kind of keeps that on the go. But is there anything that really does get you out of bed and thinking about this in the morning?
Well, I mean, the fundamental motivation is impact. You know, the world is in this dire situation and we have this one human life. What can we do to move the dial somehow? You know, what are the opportunities that we have? So I read a quote the other day. It was a very good one. People look back in their life and think about how life would be so different if they made one tiny thing, one tiny choice differently. But they don't think about how the future could be totally different if they made one tiny different choice today. You know, so we have this, humanity is kind of in this bottleneck right now. These actions that we take are going to have such a huge impact on the future of humanity. You know, we're a very special generation. We have a very special opportunity to impact the future of the whole planet. So, you know, that is very energizing. You know, it's also very depressing, but it's also very energizing because we have this chance, you know, to have a big impact.
It depends on which way you look at it, really, doesn't it? Yeah. Any challenge is an opportunity. Yeah. Thanks, John. Yeah, that's just brought us back to reality. Yeah. Not for a little while, but coming back to Seabrick, what are you most excited about in the future of Seabrick in the next little while?
Well, you said in the future, and then you said added in the next little while. So,
okay. Shorter term. Well, let's go short term and longer term. So, in the next year or two, you've got a couple of capstone projects. You're honing the manufacturing process. You're looking at the shell. So that's probably in the next cut. But what is the excitement there? Is it getting it to market? And then where is Seabrick in 5 years?
Oh, wow. Okay. So, yeah, in the next 12 months, I hope to have a demonstration project in the water, floating demonstration project of the bricks. Won't be a huge one, but, you know, it'll take us to the next technology readiness level, you know, and this proof of concept. We're also going to launch our new website, seabrick.com, and we're going to be selling, we're going to be taking pre-orders on the bricks, just like Elon Musk was selling pre-orders on his Cybertrucks. I thought that's a good idea. So we're going to take pre-orders on the bricks. You know, $10 deposit will get you place in line. To get bricks. So I'm very curious to see how that's going to land. So we'll start taking pre-orders for the bricks. And in 5 years, we'll have some scaled manufacturing facilities, you know, here in Bella Bella and hopefully in a few other places, you know, and the number of bricks produced will have lots of zeros in them. That would be a great thing. And maybe some massive projects are commissioned to be developed with the bricks. You know, the UN is building a floating city called Oceanic in South Korea. In the Maldives, they're building a floating city. The Saudis are also building a floating city. So there's a lot of mega projects that are in planning right now, but out of concrete, you know? So I think there are better options. And I think as soon as we can get to scaled production and, an engineer or an architect could rely upon having enough bricks, and the bricks are certified and they've been tested and meeting engineering standards and all the kind of stuff you need for a building. As soon as we can hit that level, then I think it's going to really take off, you know?
It's a really exciting and almost inspirational story. And I'm sure there's public out there that would love to get more involved and how can they sort of support this opportunity on its journey?
Oh, wow. Interesting. Well, we're just beginning our journey, but certainly if they reached out through the website, we'd be happy to hear from them. And we have a Discord, we have a bit of a community that's growing. So that is certainly the case. If you're an engineer out there and you're interested in material science and, you know, then definitely let us know about that, because we seem to be building quite a community of engineers here. That's quite exciting. And then, you know, and then there's the whole kind of public engagement component, you know, just raising awareness and painting a picture of what is possible. By the way, I don't know if I showed you this, but I think I did, maybe. I went on, it's called one of these AI image generators. I don't know if that thing I did share to you. I just asked it to show me pictures of floating cities. And it did a great job.
They did. And I must admit, they were different than what I expected. Let's go with that.
Yeah, completely.
Quite artistic, quite organic, if you want to say, which sort of makes sense given that it's an organic product that's being used. So,
yeah.
But it enables us to, and I think that's probably some of the message with Seabrick and the journey you've been on it, and you touched on it earlier, keep your mind open, keep creative, keep thinking different ways, keep, you know, pushing the envelope. And I think that's you've demonstrated that quite incredibly with this product or products,
Thank you.
I should say.
yeah, it's going to be a whole line of products. Yeah, it's interesting when you try and work back from a problem. So, you know, this is really an example of working back from a problem. The problem is carbon sequestration and how to scale carbon sequestration, and seeing kelp as a solution, but also seeing the challenges with the scaling of kelp as a carbon sequestration strategy. And so the little jump that I made was, well, you can grow kelp. Can you turn it into the infrastructure that is missing that you need in order to scale the kelp production? That was just kind of the little jump. And everything is kind of working back from what would be needed to solve the problem. So if we could solve that, then how are we going to assemble them? We'd have to lock together somehow. Okay, so we're going to have these locking systems. And then, well, we don't want it to be sinking in the water, so we're going to have a shell. So it's kind of all kind of working back from the final outcome, which is massive amounts of carbon sequestration. you know. And it would not take, it's not an incredible stretch, and I've done the modeling, to think about how much kelp would you have to sequester in these bricks to capture all the carbon that's been emitted since industrialization. It would actually is quite achievable. It's certainly much less than the number of roads that we built.
I mean, without, you know, maybe playing a little devil's advocate, I'm picturing lots of kelp farms. Is there a risk that we overdo it? And how do we, I guess, manage that risk?
Yeah. Well, I think there's going to be lots of scrutiny on the environmental impacts of what we're doing. I think the big question is, where is it happening and what is it displacing? And what is the net impact on the environment of the effort? So if we do this in coastal areas, you know, I think it's not going to work. You know, coastal areas already have ecosystems. They're flourishing. They're already hurting from humankind. We want to get out of coastal ecosystems. So that leaves the deep ocean. Huge place. It's a semi-desert, but it's rough space. So we're going to have a lot of thought going into that kind of infrastructure. But if we can have big infrastructure in the ocean, I think that would be needed. This is where I'm going to geek out for a moment, if you don't mind.
No worries.
You'll be okay with this, hopefully. There's a type of power generator called an OTEC generator. And the way an OTEC generator works is kind of like geothermal. It's got a big tube. It goes down a couple hundred meters in the water, and it pulls up cold water to the surface, and then the temperature differential, and it can use that temperature differential with the surface water to drive a turbine and an evaporation cycle, and it generates power. So it's great. It's a power supply. And they've got a 75 megawatt one that's kind of in testing, relatively new kind of. One of the problems they have with these OTEC generators is they're heavy, and what are you going to put them on? But we can solve that. What I like about the OTEC generators is not only do they produce power, as a byproduct, they produce fresh water, because they're doing some evaporation, you get a lot of fresh water. They also produce brine, which is concentrated salt water. And you, if you can get to brine, then you have a mining operation. Because the only reason why people do not mine the ocean is because of the cost of concentrating the substances in the ocean into a brine. And then but if you have a brine, then you can mine it quite profitably. So you get the brine as well. So they can actually be mining operations. And then the one that really intrigues me is that by bringing that water up from the deep, that deep water is actually very nutritious. You know, it's the upflow of the deep water onto the continental shelves that makes the coastal areas so abundant, so flourishing. So if you start to bring up deep ocean water to the surface, you're going to create an oasis in the deep ocean, because that water is going to be very fertile. And so you'll see lots of microorganisms growing, and you'll start to see ecosystems developing around these kelp farms. And by the way, that cold water that you bring up from the bottom causes the kelp to grow three times faster. It will grow three times faster when exposed to that kind of water. So it's also kind of a fertilizer for the kelp. So in my mind, I see these structures powered by OTEC generators as oases, as contributing to the biodiversity of the ocean, and not as a net negative. And so I think this is what's really fascinating about this, is like when we're on land, we're just a kind of a suck on the resources. We're draining them, we're cutting them down, burning them, we're doing all these negative things, and the creatures are running away from us. And frankly, there's not enough space for the creatures anymore. You know, I mean, I think the total human biomass now is more than all of the other biomass of all the other organisms. It's something crazy like that. Maybe I'm overspeaking, but it's just a lot of human bodies around, and there's not much room for anything else. We're going to have to get off the land, in my opinion. You know, if the rest of land-based habitats and ecosystems and species are going to survive. And so where do we go? Well, space. But, you know, frankly, there's not enough room for us on those spaceships. So the ocean, I think. And we can have a positive impact in the ocean and kind of reset our relationship with nature.
Well, as my role at Coast, I think bring it on. You know, you just talked about all these technologies that, you know, I want to see get off the ground or get into the water, I should say. But that's John's challenge. Like, let's build these, you know, offshore infrastructure projects and support carbon sequestration, building new products, new ecosystems, building it out of the products that we're generating from there. I think it's a wonderful vision, and I wish you the best. And unfortunately, we're running out of time. I know you, John, and I could talk for hours on this, and we have and will in the future, but I really appreciated your time and sharing your visions and the products as well. And, yeah, thank you again for taking the time.
Yeah, my pleasure. Thank you so much for having me. It's been a pleasure. Thanks, Jason.
Absolutely. So thank you, John. Fascinating conversations. It's really innovations like these that will transform the way that we live and do business and the way we treat our oceans. Thanks to our listeners for joining us for Coast Talks. If you'd like to learn more about our work, visit our website at canadacoast.ca or follow us on social media. We're on Facebook, Twitter, and LinkedIn. Bye for now.